Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
Welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
Good evening, everybody, or daytime, or whatever everybody's doing.
Morning, people generally drive to work. And today we have Ashlyn Rose, the wonderful Ashlyn Rose, on guesting today.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Of course. I think you're the first cosplayer we've ever had on this podcast.
I have dressed up as Han Solo at least at three different convention-like things, maybe.
I've seen pictures on your Facebook.
Plus, I like wear vests.
We have pictures for this?
Oh, there's definitely pictures. Alex, like, he's probably more proud to post pictures of himself as Han Solo than, like, anyone I've ever met in my entire life.
Yes, correct.
Speaking of which, I actually saw that I didn't know that 31-second international trailer for Star Wars 7 was out.
Like, oh, with the Korea, with the, yeah. Where, like, you see the army in the beginning, and there's, like, weird AT-ATs on the side.
I swear to you, I can't think of a single other, like property that when I see a trailer for it, or, like, something, my jaw drops, and I stop as if, like, it's like I'm in a trance. I get so wrapped up in it. I love Star Wars so much.
I don't share that emotion. I don't know what you're talking about. Star Wars is for nerds. Yeah. Let's talk about some Magic the Gathering.
Magic!
Tell us about yourself, Ashlyn. Tell the people that are listening about yourself. Talk about your magicness.
Oh, goodness. So I play Magic. A lot of Modern. A lot of Modern. I also stream it for fun. Play not Modern. I usually do a lot of limited play or crack some packs on stream, which is a lot of fun. And occasionally dab in some dressing up as planeswalkers from time to time.
So when you open packs, like, what's your method for pack opening? Do you suspensefully flip through the cards until you get to the rare?
Oh, of course. You gotta like slow roll it completely. Oh, I go all the way from commons to uncommons, then slowly reveal the top of the rare, and then look at the bottom a little bit, and then boom.
Wow, that's suspenseful. Do you ever open old packs ever, or just newer ones?
I opened like Innistrad not too long ago, some Innistrad packs, I've cracked two Origins booster boxes already, so
wow,
it's a lot of fun.
People just adore that stuff, right? That's like it's some weird function of our like voyeuristic mentalities in this world. We like to just like watch people do what they do.
What was it like? 55% of all videos on YouTube that were watched in the last year were openings of things.
Yeah, it's strange.
Yeah.
Which is insane. I've done one opening video, and I've never released it because I found there's these, like, box mapping apps that are out there that you can get. And so we got a Return to Ravnica box, and we set the whole camera set up. It's the first time we're going to do it. And I open it pack by pack, and I shot call every single pack, and I'm, like, wrong once. And it's the most boring video I've ever watched in my entire life because there's no suspense. It's just like, all right, this is going to be a Steam Vents. It was a Steam Vents.
Really? It worked that well?
Yeah, it worked perfectly. Like, it definitely was very successful. You, like, basically, you set the packs out on a grid, and then you open, like, the first five packs at random, and then based off of what those first five are, the app then can, like, predict what the rest of the rares are going to be, to the extent of even knowing, like, the likelihood of a foil rare or a foil being in a pack.
It is kind of remarkable that, like, that's a thing that's, like, common knowledge, the box mapping thing. Like, that's a thing people know about. There's also the thing about where you can weigh packs for like, you can feel if there's a foil based on weight.
Oh, really?
I've actually tried that.
Yeah. So both are entirely true, which is kind of remarkable considering that, like, if that's the case, why do people want to still buy packs, and how has that not been exposed, and how has it not been changed?
Well, I think that's why limited is so important to Wizards. I mean, we're getting on a little bit of a tangent, but that's why limited is so important to Wizards, because it's a way to have fun by opening packs that the value is not necessarily in just opening the pack.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. I think the other thing is it's why it's so important to, when you buy from a retailer, to make sure you get from a sealed box, or at least, like, you know, it's not just the box they keep throwing. Like, I won't go to a random store and buy packs. Unless it's, like, a Target or a Walmart where they have that, like, special sealed box thing that's, like...
Oh, those are the best. You're like, oh, my God, I found one.
Right. The most extraneous amount of packaging that's ever been created in the history of the world.
Yep.
Let me wrap this one booster pack in, like, an action figure casing.
Hey, that's how Walmart does.
Yeah, sure.
Because they care so much about the environment.
So speaking of packs that will soon be open, let's talk a little bit of Battle for Zendikar.
Oh, yeah. Before we get to that, I do want to mention to all the people out there on the internet to follow us on Twitter. We are at the MMCast. We also have a sister podcast called The Command Zone. They do Commander content. It's awesome. They like slinging 100 singleton decks, which A may know something about and Ben knows nothing about.
I know a little bit about it.
Beyond that, Battle for Zendikar. We got so basically Monday they spoiled the dual decks, and the dual decks generally have some amount of cards from the new set and are almost always themed around the set that's coming out, at least the summer dual deck. And this one I felt like had more than normal, and it like four major mechanics that are coming out, including two returning mechanics.
Yeah, some pretty weird stuff. Definitely, like, I am a big fan of Ingest. I think that's a cool mechanic.
Which, for people that don't know, Ingest is when this creature does damage to a player, you exile the top card of their deck.
Or is it, it's a number, right? Like Ingest 2? Or is it just Ingest?
I think it's just the one.
It's just the top card, yeah.
Okay, it's just the top.
So. Mind you, that's important because, like, if you look at what the big Eldrazi do, and there's only one in the set in the dual deck that we've been spoiled so far, but basically it takes exiled cards and puts them into play. So the one that we've seen is a mythic that puts lands from the exile into play, all of them untapped. So, like, the ingest triggers you're getting throughout the game will heavily affect how those big spells kind of end up doing things.
Which is super cool. Like, that's, I definitely like the interplay there. It's interesting. It is interesting. There hasn't been a lot of Magic history where, like, there's an entire zone of many, many, many exiled cards you're supposed to pay attention to for later in the game.
Yeah.
That's not a thing that's, like, very common. It's another zone that's having to be. It's kind of actually, you know what it is? It's very similar to when Suspend was a thing, and you would have cards off to the right or off to the left that were represented, like,
that were relevant exile cards?
They were exiled, but you knew that they were going to matter eventually, as opposed to, like, I exile your card with Scavenging Ooze, and now it's gone.
Right.
It also plays with cards like Scavenging Ooze,
yeah,
which is very interesting. So that's cool. I think it's a cool ability. It's complicated, but it's cool.
That's why I do think it's going to be mainly opponent stuff. Like, they don't want you kind of comboing out somehow by, like, exiling your deck and then playing one of these to get all your lands into play and then playing another, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Sure, sure, yeah.
That's
yeah.
a deep hole that we can go down to eventually. But the other thing, I do like how, you know, a lot of people, and Wizards have said this a lot, Annihilator is not a fun mechanic for people. Apparently,
I don't know what you're talking about.
Which we will be talking about later today, about how easy it is to win once you attack with something that has Annihilator. So this,
especially Annihilator 6.
I like how much it feels like defiling might be the word, but like I feel like I'm losing something and you're taking it from me without
right.
the feeling of helplessness that comes with Annihilator.
Well, there's definitely that whole feeling that was like, I mean, it's pretty classic in science fiction literature, and then like Galactus and the Fantastic Four, the sort of world-eating feeling
yeah.
that comes along with sci-fi,
yeah.
and the Eldrazi, they definitely have that feeling of I'm eating your world.
They're literally Cthulhu.
Yeah.
yeah,
they're wrecking Zendikar.
Right, and it does come with a bit of like it has an infect feel to me.
Yeah,
where like infect felt very visceral, and this I feel like. And I haven't played with it yet because no one has. But
right.
I'm imagining it's going to have a similar visceral feeling of, like, you're taking things from me in a way that you don't really experience in Magic so far.
Yeah, so the one card, we've only seen the one creature with Ingest, right? It's like the three drop.
Yeah, so we saw two creatures. Both of them had Devoid also. I know Ben has some.
Devoid. Yeah. That's, you're talking about the colorless color thing?
Yeah.
The Ghostfire thing?
Yes. Well, I mean, I think the reason they did it, I think the reason Devoid exists versus just saying this is colorless is the same reason they kind of fixed how Indestructible and Unblockable worked.
Yeah.
And they did it in two different ways with both of the situations, but basically there's enough things that affect keywords in those kind of situations that they felt like they just need everything like that to be a keyword or to not use keyword type technology and not just use like indestructible, which is just an English word. So they had to put this is now an ability, and Devoid works kind of in the same way.
I just think Devoid, like, don't get me wrong, I think it's totally fine. I don't think that anything's gonna crumble because of it. It's not like it's a bad mechanic. It's just that when I look at it and I read it and I'm like, I understand that this card is colorless because it says it has no color, but that doesn't make any sense. This is a black and red creature, just because it says it has no color, it doesn't change the fact when I look at this, like, if I'm sorting by color in my deck, I have to put this off to the side. It's just, I don't know. It's hard for me to, maybe with Ghostfire it was easier to wrap my head around because it was a spell, not a permanent. But permanents that are colorless, that have color in the casting cost, like, how are you going to play these cards in EDH decks? I'm sure you guys have talked about that.
The rules have come out on that. Matt Tabak eventually, like, he was originally like, I'm not going to tell anyone the rules on these cards. And eventually was like, well, I have to tell people. So basically he said their color identity is still black. They are just in reference to all cards that affect color, so like Doomblade, not black.
Wait, you're saying that their color is in reference to their mana symbol.
Their color identity, yeah. Which is only relevant in Commander,
right.
Is whatever their mana symbol is.
Okay, you said black, referring to the one card.
The one that that we've seen spoiled.
But there's a black-red as well.
Yeah. Okay. And for all game-mattering effects, so like Doomblade or Ugin, for example.
Whenever you cast a spell of this color, they don't trigger.
Exactly. Yeah. Or destroy all colored permanents.
Sure.
Like Ugin, or destroy target black creature, or non-black creature, like Doomblade. So Doomblade can target this creature.
They're like cost reducers that are like black spells cost this much less. Won't affect them.
Exactly.
It's very confusing.
There's most likely going to be, my guess is because Annihilator was so wonky, they've put a lot of different ways to make the Eldrazi feel Eldrazi-ish, and this is one of them. And they're going to be a lot of like, all my colorless permanents get +1/+1, or... Blah, blah, blah.
Like I said, I don't think it's bad. It's not like I don't understand it. It's just like from a new player standpoint, it's hard. It's like a hard thing to look at and like.
Yeah, really it's a little confusing.
Makes sense of, yeah.
Now, the last one is Awaken.
Yeah, that's really cool. This is kind of a little bit of a play on Fortify, right?
It's Fortify and Kicker, I guess, is kind of like. Yeah. I think this is the Kicker mechanic. I think Wizards, and they've said this 1,000 times, thinks Kicker is way too broad. Because if you really break it down, like, almost every single mechanic ever is Kicker.
Right.
And so this is their kind of like, Kicker's here, but we're making it Zendikar themed, which means it's Kicker involving making lands into creatures.
Yeah, it's sweet. And their elementals, which is cool.
Yeah.
I mean, this is like its own little thing because it's like a tribal thing a little bit. Anyway.
I think it'll play out like Kicker does. If there are spells that are printed that without this ability on it would see play, this would make them heavily playable, like staples. And if there's cards that would be on the line, this would maybe push them over the top to see standard play. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's something like a Doomblade or a Burn variant that could see play in our format.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it was efficiently costed and like maybe it was like an extra two to turn a land into a bear. Like it seems like that's the sort of modern spell you'd see. Maybe a four, like that's like the kind of, if it was in the right colors, Jund would maybe play that, like destroy your thing and get a 2/2 out of it.
Yeah.
That kind of a thing.
Yeah. So yeah, and then we get Landfall and Allies are back. We knew about Allies already because Comic-Con kind of announced that.
You kind of love Allies, don't you?
No, I just think that A, it's ridiculous that there's not a legendary ally. That's just silly. And B, I think it was dumb that there weren't just creatures with the ally type in Rise of Eldrazi. I think that was bad design mistakes. I personally am not going to like sleeve up an ally deck as soon as some lists are spoiled.
You've suggested it before. Do you have any experience playing with allies yourself, Adam?
Ashlyn.
Oh, sorry. I thought you said Adam. I was like, wait, what? No, actually, I didn't play a lot with the allies. I did Landfall. I definitely played quite a bit with Landfall, but I didn't really mess around with allies too much.
It's going to be really interesting to see how they, because Landfall just, or at least in Zendikar block, leaned so much towards aggressive strategies because everything is free when you play a land. And Eldrazi leans so much farther to the, like, wait until the last turn of the possible game to start actually doing things.
Yeah.
That, like, I'm going to be interested to see how they, like, balance those two very, very, very different leaning play styles.
Yeah, it's also interesting because, like, back then we also had really helpful, like, ramp, like, you know, Primeval Titan and stuff to kind of help along the Eldrazi. And
right.
We don't really see that type of thing now, so it's my... lead into like longer games or like, I don't know.
There is that one guy, and I think he's like $2 right now, so I definitely recommend him as a spec. But he's like, it's 2 and a red, and he has Biorhythm attached to him for whatever, and he taps for 2 colored mana.
He has Biorhythm attached to him? You're saying, is he the. He does
he's
the
like
thing?
A mythic from Dragons that, like, if there's 8 power in total on your board, you can tap it, you can Biorhythm, which, you know, does a lot of winning, but.
Yeah.
I think he's a card to look. There's like weird ramp that like isn't played right now, but like could see play if the point is to get Embercold 2.0 into play.
Landfall is real, real sweet though, having it come back because okay, like some people expect that the second set is gonna have the fetches, but a lot of people don't think that's the case.
I don't think it's the case.
So
they don't like smelling. They don't like putting their like flagship rares
in the second
small
set.
Sets like that.
So if that's the case, that means if Landfall's a thing, that they're going to need to stack the set with like lots of search things out and put them in play. It's search lands out and put them in play abilities. That's going to be a thing that has to happen. Otherwise,
for limited, yeah.
Yeah, well, and just in general, like if you want your Landfall cards to be powerful in Standard, that's going to be a thing you want. Unless you make the Landfall abilities themselves. There's a little bit of time, but I'm saying if you make the Landfall abilities broadly powerful enough that you don't need to have like fetch abilities to make them good. They're just good when you play a land. Then in the formats where you have fetches, they'll be way overpowered. So you're going to need to like do something that searches out lands to make there be a payoff, which is great because I definitely like cards that search up lands. I think that's awesome. I think it's super fun. Yeah, I think that's going to be great.
All right, so that's it for Zendikar. Ashley, do you have anything else on Zendikar actually before I move on?
No, I'm just excited to see more spoilers. Like, I want to see the Eldrazi. I want to see what they've done, where they're going with it.
I know. I mean, I'm super. I actually got lucky and somehow wormed my way into a pass at PAX. So I'm actually going to go to the party and experience the greatness that is going to be that announcement. I'm really excited. And if any of you guys listening are there, look for me.
He'll be wearing a Han Solo costume.
Now I have to do that, don't I?
Yes, you do.
It could happen. I could see it happening. All right. Battlefront's going to be there. So, yeah.
Yeah.
There's like a reason to do it. It's going to happen. All right. There'll be pictures. Look for Han Solo, PAX. All right. Cosplay. Or, yeah, I guess cosplay in general. So, Ashley, what is cosplay for those people on the internet that don't know what that is?
What is cosplay? Cosplay is, I mean, just think about dressing up as a character that you really like in something. Like, I think it's entirely, it's a very broad, like, I don't know, topic. It's a broad, like, there's, everyone has a different view of what defines cosplay. For me, cosplay is just taking something that you love and finding a way to replicate that in a way that you find fun. Like, whether that's making a Han Solo vest out of duct tape or something, or if it's, like, you know, finding the exact type of fabric and stitching it together. Like, whatever pleases you, as long as you have fun with it. And, yeah, it's, that's what cosplay is for me.
How did you find out or get it? Like, was it you just decided on your own? Were you a fan of cosplayers already before you got into it? What was it?
I actually got into it like very recently. Like, I'm still like, I consider myself a baby still.
Okay.
I went to my first convention, Fanime, in San Jose like 2 or 3 years ago. I think like probably about 3 or 4 actually. And I just went there to see what's up. And I saw these people dressed up as, like, people from the animes I'd watched. I was like, oh, my gosh, there's Hinata or something like that. And I was like, I want to do this because, you know, as a kid, I always dressed up. I always dressed up my poor pets. Like, I always found some type of baby doll clothes to throw on them. Trudging them through the house. So, yeah, I've always loved dressing up and doing things. And so when I discovered that, you know, this is a thing and it's people actually do this that aren't kids, I was like, this is awesome and I want to be a part of it.
Yeah, it's definitely, it seems to be a pretty gigantic community. There's like a lot of love for it, and it just seems to be growing. Can you explain the difference between cosplayer and cosfamous?
Okay, so I don't know if there's real, So cosfamous are people who have been really well known for their cosplays. You know, it's something like either they have a really big following or, you know, you see them, like, get hired for several events or, you know, they're just generally known to the community and more so than that, outside of the community, they're known for cosplaying. That would probably be what my definition of that would be.
Who is the biggest cosplayer out there? Like, is there like, one that's, like, the girl, I suppose?
Andy Serkis.
I wouldn't say there's one. There's a lot out there. I would say for the U.S., there's a couple big names that are thrown around. It depends on what you like, too. Like, if you like more perfect, like, I wouldn't say perfect, more original. Like, you know, you take your own liberties when you're making the outfits. Like, you know, you use a different cloth with a different pattern, maybe, or something. Kamui is really well known for her armor making. Like, she was the one who kind of introduced Warblood to the community or was the one really well known for it. She's a great person, actually, to hit up and check out if you want to get into, like, armor making.
Okay.
What was her name again?
Kamui Cosplay.
I definitely agree. I think my favorite type of cosplay in general is the, like, combination of things or taking an original spin on a character you like. Like, I think the first one I ever saw that I was like, oh, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life was a, like, samurai stormtrooper at, like, the first Comic-Con I ever went to. And it was like, how don't I own that in my life? George Lucas, take notice. I think there's definitely a lot. And I do think it's hard to say there's one most famous just because it's so much genre specific. Like, all geekdom, like, there's the most famous Magic cosplayer. There's the most famous Dragon Ball Z cosplayer. There's so many different things that people like that if you're cosplaying as Naruto, for example, you know, if I don't like Naruto or someone doesn't like Naruto, they're not going to care about that cosplayer. But every single person who likes that subject matter is going to be in love with what they're doing.
There has to be somebody, though, like when you go to the biggest conventions, like that just they've done everything. They've done all the genres and they have like a booth and they're like not even really dressed up. They're just like sitting there signing autographs. That's got to be a thing, right?
It is becoming more of a thing. You're going to see a couple people with booths and whatnot. Some of the big names that are out there right now are definitely going to be like Yaya Han, Jessica Nigri. Who else do we have? Lightning cosplay. She's really cool too. There's several male cosplays out there that actually kind of get brushed under the rug. You know, a lot of times they get forgotten about, but there's some pretty dope male cosplayers as well that have put together some really cool.
So I know Chloe Dykstra sometimes dresses up. I've got a bit of a crush on her.
She's adorable.
Yeah, she's smart and funny and attractive and good at cosplaying. So she's got it all figured out.
Perfect package.
What are some of the favorite cosplay characters you have cosplayed as, Ashlyn?
My favorite cosplays would probably have to be my Diablo 3 Witch Doctor for BlizzCon. That was so much fun to cosplay as. I think it was solely because of the fact that I had like a giant head mask on where I couldn't see anything. I had these giant horns that someone had to like walk me through the giant hall because I was like knocking people left and right. It's like, sorry. But it was just a lot of fun to cosplay as.
Does it like take a long, long, long time sometimes to get your costumes together? Like, I mean, I know like I've seen some pictures of you, so it looks pretty elaborate. Some of the costumes, like, do they take a huge amount of preparation?
Oh, yes, yes. It's kind of funny, though, because I would say, I think it's fair to say for the general community, for those of us that are less disciplined, procrastination is probably the biggest and it's probably the bane of my existence, to put it nicely. It takes a lot of time, and most of the time, you don't give yourself enough time, so it's like, you know, the night before, and you're like, oh my god, I have to glue all this together now.
That actually sounds a lot like Magic players before tournaments. That sounds the same experience we have getting ready. Well, I guess you as well.
That GP is in 6 months. I don't need to worry about that. Oh, that GP is
tomorrow. You need a deck test.
That's tomorrow.
We'll shout you out again at the end, but for the folks who are listening right now, if they want to like pull you up on Instagram, what's your Instagram?
Rar, it's Ashlyn. So RAR is in like R-A-W-R, RAR.
RAR, A-R-W-R, and it's Ashlyn.
It's Ashlyn, yes, all one word. All
right, guys, look her up.
All right, so I guess bringing it back to Magic, since this is a Magic podcast, what type of characters have you dressed up as Magic-wise?
Magic-wise, I haven't done too many yet. I've done a Sora, the female version of Sorin cosplay, which was really fun. Got to walk around with vampire teeth, and it's great. Plus Sorin's awesome.
Yeah. Okay.
Is Sorin your favorite planeswalker?
Sorin is my favorite planeswalker. He's my boy. I feel bad for him because, you know, he had all that stuff to deal with Zendikar. But, like, he's been through a lot. Like, you would think he's a bad guy because people associate vampires with like the villain, but he's actually not that bad of a guy.
Do you have a soft spot for vampires in general?
maybe.
I once played a character on a web series that Alex was the creator and producer of, where I pretended to be a vampire to pick up chicks. That was my character. His name was Fatal.
He was a villain.
I was a villain. And there was a token made of my character because it was a show about magic cards that we have in studio here that I'm very proud to have been a part of. So there you go. I have experience dressing up too. Yeah.
If someone wanted to get into cosplay, what are kind of the best ways to get started? What's the best resources? Where are good places to look up information, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera?
We are really lucky nowadays because, like, Google is a godsend. Like, there's so much you can really find online now that you couldn't, like, back in the day. Like, I didn't cosplay like that back then, but some of my friends did. They're like, it was so hard. But Google is really your best friend here. Just anything you want to figure out, just type it in and put cosplay at the end of it or tutorial at the end of it, and you can find a lot of stuff. So Google and DeviantArt is another good place to find a lot of good tutorials.
There's also the Popcorn Talk Network has a show called Cosplay Coach that they launched recently that is all about that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Look at that.
And look at the guy who said he didn't know anything about cosplay.
Well, I happen to work for the Popcorn Talk Network and do content. I you know, it's on the same channel.
That was a plug.
Well, I mean, I know it's called Cosplay Coach. I can't actually promise I have any idea what it's about, but I'm assuming by the title that it's exactly what it sounds like. So there you go.
Fair enough.
Yeah, look at that. Knowledge. Let's talk. I want to quickly talk to you about, like, we're going to get into obviously Modern Magic and Tron and everything like that, but I do want to find out. So you play Magic, you said Modern and some casual. When did you start playing Magic? I mean, how long ago did you start playing?
I started playing about 6 years ago. So I played like M10 and I definitely came in around Zendikar and stuff.
Okay, sweet. So you like, right. That's like New World Order when they changed the game and that's kind of the phase we're in now.
That's kind of where I came back. I like played back in Tempest through like Stronghold and Urza's block, etc. But then left during Combo Winter and came back during M10 because that's my Magic life story that everyone knows already because this is the podcast that I'm on. All right, continue.
we're going to talk about the deck that you play in Modern, but like historically, what's been your favorite kind of Magic? Are you like blue? Do you like to draw cards? Are you like a burn player?
So I started out like as like a white weenie player.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, just getting in, being safe and stuff. I actually hated red. Like hated it. Like I was like, if you're a red player, you just whatever. Like red so cheap.
I still feel that way for the record.
Take that, Jimmy. Shots fired.
But then I went over to the dark side and I love red. I love red. burn faces. It's great.
I'm like with that player that I love. This is, we talked to Patrick Chapin last week, and he basically was like, you get to play blue for these cards and black for these cards, and red has the card Lightning Bolt. And it's like, that's basically how I feel. It's like, I'll play red as like a supplemental color because I love to burn people in the face after I've gotten their life total low. So like, tempo decks with red in them are my favorite thing ever. But like, that's where I draw the line. I won't play a straight burn deck.
I feel like you'd play like a Monastery Mentor. If you're a Mr. Tempo player, you'd throw that in there and just like sit back, do some prowessing into...
You're talking about Swift Spear?
Yeah, what'd I say?
You said Monastery Mentor.
Mentor. Oh,
I 100% meant Swift Spear.
No, I mean, I would play Swift Spear maybe, except like, it's not...
Delver of Secrets.
Kind of, but it's not evasive, and it's not like a wizard. Like, it's, right?
It's a monk.
Yeah. If I'm going to play a one drop and it's in like, it's going to be like flying. This is where we're just uber nerds. Like, okay, I have moments every once in a while where I'm like, you know, I play Magic, but I'm not like that big of a nerd. I'm like, I'm a nerd. But I listen to myself having a conversation where I'm like, it's not a wizard. It's a monk. And I only play supplemental red spells. It's like, oh, I'm a huge dork. Like, there's a life-size C-3PO sitting behind you. So that's actually.
That's mine. Yeah. All right. So.
Let's talk a little bit of Tron. So was this the deck you started Modern with, or did you pick it up recently?
So tying into my background, actually, of getting into Magic. So back in the day, I played for Standard Eldrazi Green. Eldrazi Green was my deck. I loved it. It was like my baby. I cried when it went away and grew up. And so when I got into Modern, I was like, oh, I can play Eldrazi Green again. And played that for a little bit. I was like, I discovered Tron. It's like, oh, this is a lot faster. And it's pretty much like Eldrazi Green. And it kind of, like, I slowly moved over to Tron. Like, I still kept my prime times for a while and then finally let them go and, like, full hauled over.
It's, not too long ago. It's a sweet deck. I mean, no doubt about it. And, like, I mean, just, like, there is a thing about Primeval Titan, right? Like, I get what you're saying because it's, like, it's really, really hard to think about not playing that card if you're used to playing it. It's so uniquely powerful.
It is.
It's so good and has been so good for so long. Like, what's the closest thing to prime time that we've ever seen in terms of just, like, does that much? One of the other Titans, maybe? I don't know.
Necropotence. Emrakul.
Yeah, it's pretty gnarly. And it's at six. But, I mean, anyways, we digress. So, Tron, you play red-green Tron, largely?
Yes. Red-green Tron, yep, pretty much.
Have you messed around with the other ones at all?
I haven't. I've played against them, but they're not my cup of tea. They're obviously fun decks, but I'm honestly not that much of a blue player. I tend to overthink things with blue, so that's why I stick with, like, red or anything not blue.
You just like to see the world burn a little bit.
Yeah, of course. Just burn and run over with giant Eldrazis.
There's also that black Tron deck people have been talking about recently. I've seen some of those lists. Seems kind of cool. I mean, you can basically play Tron. Like, you can get away with playing Tron with any color combination.
I mean, like, the basis of Tron is colorless, so
yeah.
Add any color you want in there. You just can't really play more than two colors because
Yeah.
You have 12 colorless lands in your deck at minimum.
There's also Gifts Tron and there's Teachings Tron. I mean, there's a lot of different versions that are pretty cool. Actually, total tangent, still Magic related and still Modern related. But okay. I did see a deck list the other day, speaking of like being able to play any colors. And I don't know if either one of you guys have ever seen this, but it's a Xur Doran deck. Right, I know, right? It sounds nuts. Black, it's 5 color.
Right, you'd have to be.
And it plays like seven of the sweetest enchantments that you can play that are all a kind of utility, like has like 2 detention spheres. It has a Blood Moon, just one, just so you can search it with Xur if you want to win on the spot if you can. It has like 1 Courser of Krufix. It has like really weird deck. But it looked awesome and like you like attack. Oh, it has the 1 Assault Formation, the enchantment version of Doran. So you like attack with Xur if you don't have a Doran, and you like pull the Assault Formation. Now your Xur is a 4/4 flyer. It was really cool. I saw it didn't win any games, but I saw it.
It looked fun.
Its mana base didn't work at all, and it didn't kill a player once, and I don't think it ever worked. But it looked cool.
It was like an SCG video, and like this is what I thought was weird about it. Like I watched 2 of the games, right, and they didn't win either. And the thing that was strange was they decided the matchup was going to be that versus 8-Rack. I was like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Why would I want to watch a 5-color deck that's like mana hungry play against a smallpox deck? Like these are rogue decks.
Right.
Like let's put this up against a deck that is at least kind of fun to see it work against. It was like game on. He's like, search for my land. Get colors 2 and 3. He's like, smallpox. Ah!
So, all right, guys, enough about weird decks. It's time to actually talk about what we came here to talk about. That is Tron. Ashlyn, we're about to go to the Eldrazi planet, so why don't we talk about what Tron is trying to do?
All right, so Tron basically wants to ramp up as fast as possible to get the biggest creatures or planeswalkers out, preferably Eldrazi or some kind of colorless dude that wrecks face as soon as it gets on the board or the next turn.
Like Karn.
Or Wyrmquail Engine.
Or what's Ugin. Ugin. Him.
Ugin, yeah. Or what's that one? Imra Cool.
Oh, yeah. He's sweet.
Not Emiria Trickster? Or Emiria, is that a thing? No, that's Cozy's Trickster. All right, let's continue. Yeah.
So with Tron, when they printed Ugin, were you already a Tron player?
Yes.
Were you pretty excited when you read Ugin?
Yes, I was actually really excited. I really like Ugin. Ugin's ridiculous, especially in Tron. He's just so strong. Like,
what was interesting to me about Ugin, and this is purely off of playing against the deck, but both Ugin, like already the deck had this crazy amount of inevitability. Like there was something about Emrakul that just eventually this deck is going to win, so you have to kill it first. And Ugin just like made that plan so much more strong based off the fact that A, it's a board wipe that also adds another level of inevitability, so it really just handles everything that's coming at you.
And it's plus Lightning Bolt. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, it's plus Lightning Bolt, and it basically just, as soon as you get him on the board, it just helps secure that inevitability of either you're going to die by Ugin or I'm gonna cast Emrakul, and I'm going to have time to do it now.
Do you have a favorite Tron moment you've ever had as a Tron player?
Favorite Tron moment? There's been so many. probably having that perfect hand, like the perfect winning hand. I think I posted it on Instagram, but like just drawing 7 cards, having Tron and Karn in your hand, you're just like, I think I'll keep.
Well, I've always kind of said this, and I may have mentioned, we've done a Tron deck tech once before, but it was way back in the Jeskai Ascendancy Treasure Cruise days. But Karn is kind of just Liliana on steroids. Like, Liliana is already one of the best cards in the format, and it's a turn 3. Either my opponent discards every turn with me, or I can kill a creature. And Karn is only my opponent discards forever with no advantage based off of it. Plus, I can exile anything that they try playing, and he's impossible to kill on turn 3. Good luck. GG.
Yeah.
Let's just play another game.
Yeah, and he can make you play another game, but he plays with your stuff.
Yeah, the literal let's play another game.
Well, there's definitely something very powerful about decks where, like, I've done the thing before where you're like, okay, you build your deck knowing that Tron's a thing, so you have Ghost Quarters main deck. And you're like, okay, I'm going to go down a land right now, but I'm going to hit their Tron piece, and I have something pretty decent in my hand, so I'll be okay. And you, like, Ghost Quarter their land, and then they just, like, natural that piece. And you're just like, God, what you're doing is so powerful. Like, when you get lucky, it's not like you get lucky and draw a Lightning Bolt. It's like you get lucky and draw that third land that just plays Ugin. It's like, what?
Yeah, it feels so good when you top deck that too. Like after having one, like if they're like, I'll destroy your plant, and then you like you pull the top card and you're like, power plant, yes.
Well, and that's kind of part of it. Like something they're really taking into consideration is Tron is filled with tutors. Like it's one of the decks that Aven Mind Center is really important against if you're playing that card, because so many of the cards in the deck are, let me search for the land pieces that I need to just make my game plan happen. While most players are playing Tarmogoyfs in their first two turns, Tron is playing ways to tutor their three lands so that on that turn three, they can play the Karns, Wurmcoil Engines, and Eldrazi Eventuality.
Yeah, and then you just like exile the Tarmogoyf, so problem solved.
Fair enough.
Why is that card on? Yeah, Karns should be. All right, so what are some important things to keep in mind when playing the deck?
When playing it, I think when you're actually playing Tron, it's important to I think it's safe to say for any deck in general, but know the other decks in the format, especially against when you're playing Tron, because you can be like, if you don't have it by turn three or four, there's a couple matchups where you like you're gonna lose by turn like four or five, and you need to be able to be prepared so that you can kind of get your way into where you need to go with Tron when you're in those matchups. Don't get blindsided by planeswalkers in your hands. You know, you definitely want to keep in mind that you want as much ways to get the lands you need as fast as possible in your hand, because there are other ways to draw the inevitability that you need. Like, you want to make sure you have all the tutors in hand or a way to get what you need so that you can cast Emrakul.
Well, and that's one of the strengths, I guess, of Eye of Ugin, where like you have so many ways to tutor lands out, and once you get the pieces you need, you can start tutoring for Eye of Ugin, which then lets you tutor out any of the Eldrazi in the deck.
Yeah, and Wurmcoil.
Right.
Yeah.
Fair enough. So when you bring this deck to a tournament, what do you want to play against? What don't you want to play against?
Well, I don't want to play against Twin.
It's a little faster than you, right?
It's so much faster, and it's literally just a race. Like, there are sideboards that you can bring in which help, but it's still like every turn you're like, are you gonna go off? Are you? Gosh, dogs! You're like, you don't know, and it's just a race with them, and it's frustrating. Hey,
what's the matchup you want to play the most?
Matchup, Jund junk, like all day. It's totally fine. And any type of like not particularly burn, just because it's so fast, but any type of just like mid-range red decks okay too.
The fair decks for the most
part.
Because you're doing something that's unfair.
If they can kill you randomly out of left field or just in one turn, that's when Tron would generally probably have a problem with the deck. But any deck that's trying to like attack you regularly and just kind of one for one you is going to run into much more difficulty against Tron.
Yeah.
So let's do the gauntlet a little bit. Let's talk about, well, do you want to check the deck list or the gauntlet first, Kistler?
Before you get into the gauntlet, I do want to say, since we've done this story, what kind of new cards came out of Khan's block for the deck? Other than maybe just Ugin? Or was it just Ugin and Ugin's deck?
Came out of Khan's? I think it might just be Ugin. At least from my deck.
Is there any sideboard stuff, maybe? Probably not, right?
No.
I don't think so.
Hanger back walker. Going to start walking back.
The card's so sweet.
All right. So, yeah, the gauntlets. Let's get into the gauntlet.
Would Hangerback Walker actually be a card that, like, there's a chance could get C-play in Tron? I guess it might, right? So it's colorless. It's big mana. Like,
I guess my question would be if Hangerback Walker would be C-play in the deck, and Ashlyn, correct me if I'm wrong, but there'd have to be a matchup it's good against that Tron has a problem against. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's... Because Tron's not like, oh, board wipes... They're a problem because Tron is the board wipes. Like I think at this point they run over 10 board wipes between Pyroclasm, the artifact that kills everything, and Ugin.
Oblivion Stone.
That's a lot of board wipes for worrying about other people's board wipes.
Yeah. Agreed. And like, I mean, Hangerback maybe for sideboard, but if you really think about it, like you can have a bunch of mana to cast them, but at the same time you'd be casting something else that's gonna do a lot more for you.
Right, you already got Wurmcoil.
Yeah.
I think maybe if it becomes a format that, like, you need some type of early aggressive threat, maybe?
Yeah.
As, like, a 1-1? I don't know. Yeah, I don't see it happening.
Do you have a favorite Magic card of all time, Ashlyn?
Favorite Magic card of all time? Ooh, that's a tough one. I think it's Primetime.
Yeah, it's so sweet.
So why aren't you on the Amulet Bloom train, or just?
I am not on the Amulet Bloom train because I would royally probably mess it up. I don't think I could actually play it. It's just because you have to play it, like, you have to lay your lands down right, or else you kind of like lose to yourself.
Right. The few times I've played tested with the deck, it's always been like, I would never want to take this to a tournament just because I'm going to lose more than my opponents are going to win. Right.
Yeah, you have to kind of be just like a genius to be good at that deck.
The like sequencing of lands and the correct lands to grab at the correct time is literally the only thing that keeps you from winning.
Yeah, it's very complex when it comes to that. It's a game against yourself in that matter.
Which, like, you know, Eggs was kind of like that way, and I do know that, like, those are the type of decks that just you can solitaire to eventually get good enough at playing.
Yeah.
For me, the best place for me to solitaire is on my phone on Decked, and it was a nightmare when I've tried doing it on that, because it's like I have to return a land to my hand and then tutor, and then it's
I had a very similar experience
thinking about it. So yeah, let's get to the gauntlet. You already mentioned black green decks. What about the hyper aggressive affinity? What is Tron's game plan against that kind of deck?
I feel like it's definitely like game one's rough, just because affinity is colorless and Ugin can't hit affinity. Like, people have tried that. It's like Ugin can't do colorless wipes.
Right.
But I think after sideboard, it's not too bad. Like, we have artifact removal and Oblivion Stone. I actually have what is it called? I think it's Perilous Vault.
Right.
Yeah, that's the standard card, wipe, right?
Yeah, that one exiles everything instead of going into the graveyard.
Okay. That's relevant, yeah.
So that helps quite a bit with that, so that they can't bring stuff back. But yeah, I haven't played against it much.
Fair enough. And last but not least, because we already talked about Splinter Twin, Amulet of Vigor. The other big mana deck of the format.
The other unfair deck of the format.
That one's hard. Like, it's either they win or they don't win, I feel like. I don't know. I there's only one person at our shop who plays it, and I didn't go up against it much at Vegas. But I think you can sideboard in Slaughter Games and hope they don't win. But, like, by the time you can cast Slaughter Games, they should have won. So it's hard.
Right. I feel like the best plan of attack here is really comes down to Karn coming down early, just because then you can start exiling their lands and keeping them off of it. But that involves them not winning on turn three.
Exactly.
So it's definitely, I would say, yeah, you just have to hope it gets banned.
I saw that crazy matchup, though. It was at one of the modern tournaments recently where Hain, I think, don't quote me on this because I feel like I could be misremembering it, but I feel like it was Hain playing Bloom. Somebody else playing Tron. They resolved Karn. They started exiling his lands. And he still was able to, like, Summer Bloom into enough lands to play Hive Mind and win. Gosh. And it was, like, one of those things where you're just like, how did that happen? Like, it's so unfair. Like, you just exiled three of your lands in a row and you still managed to win.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, something crazy. Anyway.
Yeah, so Bloom.
I don't think it'll get banned. I think it's just going to stay as, like, a borderline.
Well, yeah, like you know, it's high chance still. Like you said, like, it's a game, like, you have to play it right or else you're just going to lose to yourself.
The Goryeo's Vengeance deck, though I've heard less about it recently, seemed more unfair.
Yeah, I've played a lot of games, actually, against that deck, and every single time I'm like, this is...
Yeah.
The inevitable... Because there's just... I don't know how to beat that deck.
Yeah, it just seems completely unfair.
Splinter Twin? I think it's Splinter Twin. Oh. I think the way to beat that deck is just comboing them out and winning before they do.
Faster. Yeah, definitely.
Yep.
I was going to say, there's also the living twin.
Twinning End.
Right? Twinning End, yes. Either or. That one, that is like the bane of my Tron existence. Just
because there's no way to really interact with them. Would you say that's your worst matchup?
Yeah, I think so. For me personally, at least. I mean, it's gotten better in that I've added Surgical Extraction to my sideboard.
Okay.
But it's just the Fulminator. Like, Fulminator Mage is so good and horrible at the same time.
Yeah, it's very good against you, that's for sure.
Yeah, it just wrecks. And when it, like, can come back and you can twin it, it hurts.
So, for people out there on the internet, we were originally going to do all of the Trons for the deck tech, but because we've had some recording issues, I want to make sure we get towards the ending of everything. And so we will be doing a Mono Blue Tron deck separately at a point very nearby in the future.
Sure. Yep. We had somebody ask about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So excellent. Thank you for answering all of our questions about Tron. we have a bit of a rapid fire for you.
Oh, boy.
We're going to give you 60 seconds to answer 10-ish questions.
Pressure.
If you'll take the challenge.
600 seconds.
Oh, man. I'm sure.
Yeah,
was
okay.
That the first one?
all right. I'm going to count from down from three, and we're going to go.
Okay.
Are you ready? Three, two, one, boom. Last person you texted.
I don't even know. My mom.
All right, all right. Favorite breakfast cereal?
Cookie Crisp.
Least favorite magic card?
Fallen Intermage.
Favorite Star Wars character?
Star Wars character? Probably one of the Ewoks. Just the Ewoks in general.
Do you play any other games than just Magic?
Yes, I play tons of MMORPGs, RPGs in general, and RPGs some more.
Dream car.
Dream car? Probably, I guess from when I was a kid, probably a Lamborghini.
We would have accepted X-Wing.
We would have, would have accepted
X-Wing.
No, no, no.
And what country do you want to retire in?
Ooh, probably either Japan or the Philippines.
All right, good answer.
Thank you, thank you.
So, before we get into the wrap-up, I do want to ask you and the people on Twitter, what new mechanic are you most excited about from Battle for Zendikar? What of all the new stuff coming up, what are you most excited for?
I think for me personally, I'm most excited for new mechanic-wise. I'm liking Awaken. I want to see what I can do with it. And just in general, Landfall. I really like Landfall, and it was a lot of fun. So, I can't wait to do broken things with it again.
Awesome. All right. Well, I do want to thank you for coming on, Ashlyn. Can you let everyone on the internet where the best place to find you on the internet, since that's where they're at?
The best place, probably Twitter, Facebook, or my stream, twitch.tv/Ashlyn_Rose. Twitter is at Ashlyn Rose, and Facebook is going to be miss.ashlynrose.
Very good.
And to remind everyone, we are at the MMCast on Twitter. Please follow us. We will tweet at you and tweet with us. And I am at Kes Wiley.
And I'm at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and sometimes on Instagram.
Make sure to rate us on iTunes. It's important because then we get more followers that then will tweet at us and we'll tweet back at them. And then you have people to converse with and the community grows together.
And a huge thank you to all of those that have been doing it already, because you guys have just really been fantastic recently.
Remind you, follow the Command Zone. Go check them out. They are also on rocketjump.com. They do awesome commander content. There's like generals flying at each other. They do good strategy. If you guys are only modern players, they do have a few episodes that are very much more on like good play habits. So they're also a good place to go to just to get kind of better at Magic. And, you know, they're great guys. They're really interesting. And
thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to the mmcast@rocketjump.com. See you later, alligator.